second hour of the Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathert. This is the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. It's always a very special treat to talk to our next guest, and we don't talk to him nearly often enough. He is the Reverend Dr. James Lamb, Executive Director of Lutherans for Life, headquartered in Nevada, Iowa, and the victim, I believe, today of something of an ice storm going on. Is that your weather situation, Dr. Lamb?
That is the weather situation. You're visiting with me at home because we live about 15 miles from Nevada, and we're not able to, or at least didn't even attempt to go in this morning because we had about a quarter inch of ice at least, and now it's snowing on top of that. So we decided to stay home.
So is it a pretty serious situation? Anytime you have ice like that, you have electrical problems usually.
Right, and there are some areas of the state that I understand that are out of power, but we're doing okay here, so we're thankful for that.
So you're on your cell phone today?
Yes.
You think it'll hold out for the whole hour? I hope it does.
I hope it will. If not, my charger is close at hand.
Well, Dr. Lamb, I like to flirt with the political realm. I like to kind of follow it. I'm not a political junkie.
Neither am I.
I'm not consuming everything there is, but Iowa is front and center on the political stage because of the Iowa caucuses, and every television program that I watch that has some political commentary or political analysis, it doesn't take them very long before they're talking about Iowa. So you're kind of in the center of another storm up there, a political storm. Are you caught up in that since it's going on around you? I'm sure that it's dominating your newspapers and radio programs where issues are discussed. Has it affected Dr. James Lamb?
Well, you can't help but know that it's going on around you, obviously, because of the reasons you mentioned. And, you know, our commercials are constant ads from the various politicians. There was a little letter to the editor in the Des Moines Register this morning where someone was pleading for all the candidates to just stop their ads, at least for Christmas. And let us get through the Christmas season in peace.
I can tell you right now that's not going to happen.
I know. I know. But it was, I just saw it as kind of a community expression of the frustration.
Are the ads ugly?
It was a constant barrage.
Have they gone to the mudslinging form yet up in Iowa?
Well, I don't watch a lot of television, so I haven't seen a lot of the ads. Hear some on the radio, and it doesn't seem to be too many attacks from what I have heard, but there's always going to be some of that. You have to, in the minds of the voters, raise some questions with people, but I hear them and read about them dealing with the issues, not always specifically, but at least trying to do that. I mean, right now, everybody wants their party's nomination, and that is the goal and the key. And they're going to try to say things and craft the way they say things so that they can get that. That's the name of the game. But I am certainly not a political junkie at all. And so I take these what all the candidates are saying with a grain of salt, knowing that their goal is right now to get a nomination.
So you are not one of those people who just consumes every bit of political analysis that you can find. However, the issue that is front and center for you, the pro-life issue, is closely linked to this process. And whoever we elect about a year from now is going to have a profound impact on the future of the pro-life movement. So you must, I would think that you have your finger on the pulse of the process, at least to that extent.
Yes, to where the candidates are on the life issues, that's what's important for us at Lutherans for Life. And those things we try to be aware of. And of course, we're not, we cannot support a candidate and never do, but we want our people to be aware of where candidates stand on the life issues.
Will you publish something somewhere along the way on all of the candidates and their pro-life positions as far as you can discern them?
No, Lutherans for Life has never produced, referring to as like a voter's guide, because right to life groups across the country, National Right to Life, and then, you know, like Missouri Right to Life and the various state Right to Life groups, they will produce the voters' guides on where people stand on these issues. And so Lutherans for Life has not gotten into doing that kind of thing. We feel it's important that Christian voters understand the significance of these issues and the difference that they are. There's a big difference between someone who wants to support abortion rights, and has a particular position on how they're going to fix Social Security. Abortion is not just another issue among all the issues. Abortion is a critical issue for the Christian because it deals with the life or the loss of life of an unborn child. And so we, Lutherans for Life, besides wanting people to know and understand and steering them where they can know and understand, we try to avoid those kinds of things and focus on what we do and what we do best, and that is to continue to connect God's people to what God has to say. I guess our way of helping people see the difference between the example I gave, Social Security and abortion, is to have them look at what God says about life and the value of life and what He has done that gives value to that human life. And then they will see that, yeah, there is a big difference. Because in abortion, we're not just talking about the death of a child to a Christian, but we're talking about the death of a child that's the work of God's hands. And we're talking about the death of a child for whom Jesus died. We're talking about the death of a child that God wants to call as His own through faith, through baptism. So that's the focus of Lutherans for Life, is to raise up the importance of this, the issue of abortion and other issues that involve life and the destruction of life, the disregard for life, and have people see that from a biblical perspective.
Our numbers are 505-780-50, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest is the Reverend Dr. James Lamb, Executive Director of Lutherans for Life. Has been a parish pastor in his time, so as is usually the case, you can set the agenda here and go whatever direction you like. However, it does seem to make sense that pro-life questions and issues would be the order of the day for today. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's a call from Glendale. Hi, Ruthie. You're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for being on, Dr. Lamb. I have a question. I have a friend whom we would call pro-abortion, but he says he's not pro-abortion. He just wants it safe, legal, and rare. And we know it's not safe, and we know it's not rare. But how can I show him that he really is pro-abortion?
All right. You want to stay on the line or listen on the radio?
I'll just listen off.
All right. Thanks for the call. Dr. Lamb?
Thank you, Ruthie. Did Ruthie hang up? Is that?
Yes, she is gone.
Okay. I can't remember. I don't think she identified her friend as whether he would be Christian or not. But the whole idea of saying I'm not in favor of it, but I want it to be safe, legal, and rare. Is that whole phrase, safe, legal, and rare, is just kind of a euphemism for supporting abortion rights. Because the only way it's going to be safe is if it's not happening. And the only way it's going to be rare is if it's not happening. To open even a little crack like that opens the whole door I mean, this was the mantra of many politicians, safe, legal, and rare, is Bill Clinton's big mantra. But it's never become that, and it never will. That's simply a crack in the wall, and leads to a big opening.
I think if I were to respond, Ruthie, to a proposition I would like that, I would say that the one thing, the one fatal flaw in that logic is that abortion is never safe, never will be, never can be for the child. And that's really the crux of the question. That's where you get hung up between the pro-choice and the pro-life person. You've got to identify the truth about the unborn human being. Is that human being, or is that fetus, is that a human being? And if it is, then it's not safe.
Yes, you were referred to as an insightful man, I believe, in the Bible study during that, and you're exactly right. You got to the point, the fallacy in the argument is that we're never, we tend to leave the child out of it. And the child in an abortion, a child always dies in an abortion.
505-780-1800-730-2727. Here's Chuck over in Collinsville. Hi, Chuck. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. We found out yesterday that my mother-in-law, an 87-year-old woman who's handicapped, had her home broken into by three guys with a fourth guy outside. And they proceeded to pistol whip her and leave her with broken ribs laying on the floor while they robbed her house. Do you see that as a direct spinoff of the abortion mentality in this country?
All right, we'll talk about it.
Thank you.
Is there a link, Dr. Lamb?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I'm a sociologist to say for certain notice studies that show that there's a link, but it certainly makes sense. And there are studies out there that talk about the connection between abortion and violence. Linda Bartlett, former president of Lutherans for Life, has written a little brochure about that. Because what abortion has done is desensitized us to the value of human life. And it's been legal now since 1973, and year after year after year, that is the message that abortion sends, that violence is a way to solve a problem. And we've lowered the dignity and the value of human life through this brutal destruction of children not yet born 3,600 plus times every single day. That's a lot of violence that happens every day. And certainly that has had an effect upon our attitude towards life and how we solve problems in our society.
You know, I don't know if we can draw a one-to-one correlation between Roe versus Wade in 1973 and the pistol whipping of Chuck's mother-in-law.
Certainly not.
I don't know if we can, but I do think we can connect a series of dots which eventually lead from one place to the other. These murders in Colorado over the weekend, the Omaha mall shootings, the elevation of violence in our culture, I think, can be traced at least in part, indirectly, to the acceptance of it is okay to kill some people. In this case, it's okay to kill unborn children. Once you come to that moral conclusion that it's okay to kill one class of people, then I think you've opened Pandora's box, and once Pandora is out, you have things like we saw over the weekend and we saw in Omaha.
Yes, Chuck had used the phrase in his question, I believe, abortion mentality, and that is what you just described, is the mentality that says certain people are better off dead. That's what we hear in euthanasia kind of arguments. We hear it in arguments for abortion as well. or that certain people don't have a right to life, or that certain people can be eliminated in order to preserve my right to life. Interesting, just in the news the last couple of days, there is Australian professor has proposed a $5,000 tax on parents who have more than one child. And the reason for the whole thing is because having more children will hurt the environment, because we'll have more people producing greenhouse gases, et cetera. So this whole argument, some women in England were saying the same thing. They have abortions in order to protect the environment. So the abortion mentality leads to all kinds of strange twists of logic when it comes to human life.
Michael Vick got 23 months in federal prison for his brutality toward dogs. And in the, I'm going to call it a circus environment or circus atmosphere around the courthouse and the sentencing phase of Michael Vick's trial yesterday, there were PETA people, there were animal rights people who were there demonstrating against Michael Vick. And I wonder if when Dr. James Lamb hears those reports or sees the video of those people and their passion, if you aren't privately sad that pro-life people can't seem to generate the same passion for unborn children as PETA people can generate for animals.
Well, I actually, that really doesn't come up in my thinking so much. I mean, I understand that, and yeah, there's a part of me that says that. But you see, I get to witness because I work with some really wonderful people, and I get to witness, especially in our Lutheran churches, people who really do have that passion, people who do stand up, not so much on the picket lines, although that happens as well, marching, as we'll be doing in Washington in January, or people who are in front of abortion clinics doing sidewalk counseling. Those people have that great passion, but I also see them in congregations and talking to their fellow Christians, teaching Bible studies on these issues, raising awareness that these issues are spiritual issues. And they're, among our grassroots people at Lutherans for Life, you know, I get to speak at various state conferences of Lutherans for Life or chapters. I just did a couple of 25th anniversaries for chapters. And these people are passionate about not just life, but they're passionate about God's gift of life and the new life that He gives us in Christ, and they want others to understand what we're doing when we devalue life. We're also insulting the Lord of life. So I understand what you're saying, and I certainly would like to see God's people, the church, Lutheran churches, standing up more and being a greater voice. I believe that only till we are that great voice and we start changing our own people's hearts and minds, are we ever going to bring a change to our society. But I do see it going on with groups and individuals. So I'm encouraged. The passion is out there. We just need to magnify it and spread it around.
Dr. Lamb, I'm going to make a proposal here, proposition, and you tell me whether or not I'm crazy, because you would know. You have fought the good fight on every front and continue to do so, and this may be a dead end. But you know, those people who were protesting Michael Vick's brutality to animals, they didn't have to be Christians to have that passion. I'm sure that some of them are Christians and some of them aren't. But they know brutality when they see it, and they take a stand against it. And they're vocal that this is wrong and it should not be permitted. you don't really have to be a Christian, I don't think, to be able to see the brutality of abortion or partial birth abortion or saline abortion. You don't have to be a Christian to see how brutal and uncivilized that is, to come to the conclusion that this is wrong. And it seems to me that if you were to come at it from that angle alone, and let's just for the moment, you and I, subtract the spirituality and let's subtract the biblical approach, let's just set that aside for a moment. Isn't the mere brutality in what we've learned in all these years since Roe v. Wade in terms of science and fetology and all those things, isn't that evidence compelling enough to say we have to stop this?
Well, it's certainly evidence that this is morally wrong, but obviously has not been compelling enough because abortion is still going on. And so what do we do to elevate that argument? I know that one of the things is to show that brutality, and that means showing pictures of what abortion does. And there's arguments out, you know, whether that should be done or not, but I believe that there are situations where it can be done and should be done. Certainly I don't take those kinds of pictures into elementary classrooms, but I do show them to high school students to help them see that reality. And I think until we see the face of abortion and we see what it looks like, it's not going to change. It's a great argument to make, but we need to be able to put it before the face of people, and that becomes difficult to do. You know, we have the cases on college campuses where groups go in with their signs and their pictures and are not allowed to do that. And the media is certainly not going to be printing pictures of aborted babies for us. So it becomes, it's certainly a good moral argument to make. It is an atrocious act, dismembering babies, you know, while they're alive, tearing limbs off. These are horrible things. But once again, this has been going on for so long that there's this huge disconnect in people's mind between just the word abortion and what it is that abortion really does. And it's Satan has built that wall, and it's just very, very difficult to break through that and to crack through that and to help people understand the reality of this word abortion.
You see, I think...
I probably wandered off.
That's okay. There, I think that the majority of folks are probably opposed generally to abortion, but they're in favor of sexual liberty. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
Here at AM 850 KFUO, it's a privilege to say thank you to our caring donors, including Harold and Doris Mertz of Valley Park, Warren Flance of Arnold, Sue Thomas of St. Louis, and Jonathan and Juanita Watt of Howard, South Dakota. Thanks for making the programs on AM 850 KFUO possible.
The Northern Virginia Chapter of Lutherans for Life invites pro-life advocates to join its members in the January 22nd March for Life and related activities, and is offering to help individuals and groups arrange for complementary housing through host families. The annual march in Washington, D.C. marks the anniversary of the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion in the United States. To join the LFL delegation that day, email Dennis DeMauro at Dennis, DIMAURO, at yahoo.com.
The big wave theory may be supported by the Bible. Learn about it next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Why What's the biggest wave you've ever seen on a lake or the ocean? Some scientists are now saying that there is evidence that in ancient times a wave over 1,000 feet tall swept over parts of the Earth, creating some of its geological features. The largest wave ever recorded in modern times was a 1,700-foot wave which struck a remote area of Alaska. A landslide caused the wave, which was magnified by the shape of the bay, until a wall of water almost one-third of a mile high swept onto the opposing hills, stripping them of forests. Two people drowned, but miraculously fishermen aboard two boats were swept out to sea and lived to tell about the ride of a lifetime. Some geologists have proposed that a similar wave caused by an underwater landslide swept across the Hawaiian Islands in the more distant past. As evidence, they point to blankets of gravel, sometimes 25 feet thick, as well as other debris from the ocean, which is found scattered across the southern slopes of the Hawaiian Islands. Other geologists believe that these are the remains of a sea that was once much higher. Well, according to the Bible, they may both be right. It's possible that these gravel beds and ocean bottom debris may represent both the violence of the Great Flood and the higher sea levels at the end of the flood, which is recorded in Genesis.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
We've all heard that old advice, never discuss religion or politics. Well, at Issues Etc., we think this statement is old. It's also just bad advice. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to tune in to Issues Etc., where the discussion of both Christianity and culture isn't off limits.
Weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on AM 850 KFUO.
Hear vocalist Aaron Bodie at the Foundry Arts Center, St. Charles.
Every time a street light flashes by my car, I see you. It's not too late to get it straight, to get in right.
Aaron Bodie at the Foundry Arts Center, St. Charles.
If my heart should break, I can't leave the season.
Aaron Bodie, Tuesday, it's December 18th, 7:30 p.m., the Foundry Arts Center, Historic St. Charles.
You're listening to the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Second hour of the Bible Study today, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest is the Reverend Dr. James Lamb. He is the Executive Director of Lutherans for Life, a pro-life organization that generally moves about within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and perhaps other Lutheran agencies, as well as the public square. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What I was saying before we got to the break, Dr. Lamb, my own personal perception that I think if you could read the hearts of most Americans, they would say, you know, we wish that abortion would go away. It's not good. It's grisly in some ways. And as an alternative, it's not a good alternative. However, if we were to give up our right to abortion, then that means that all kinds of women would be stuck with pregnancies that they don't want to have. And if we have to choose between the lesser of two evils, rather than force women to have children that they don't want in this very sexually liberated time in which we live, we're just going to have to allow abortion. I think that's the way most folks view it. What do you think?
Well, we certainly know from data and polls that most Americans are opposed to most abortions. When you phrase the questions properly, that's how the data comes out. On the other hand, your argument is true that abortion has been around so long, and it has become a means of getting rid of a a problem pregnancy, as folks put it, so they don't have to talk about what really happens in an abortion. And so it does lead then to sexual promiscuity and becomes that a method, really, of true birth control. And also, I believe you talked about women, but I think women should be outraged at abortion in terms of that it is also a way that relieves men of responsibility of having fathered a child. And it becomes a way for them to abandon that responsibility towards the mother and the child that they have conceived together. So I think women should be outraged at abortion simply because of it does away with man's responsibility, the father's responsibility, gives him a relief valve, so to speak.
Yeah, but Dr. Lamb, for centuries, forever, men have had this tremendous advantage. Men have been permitted to, quote-unquote, sow their wild oats. And as they enjoy the sexual advantage they have, that is, they're not stuck with the child, some women have felt the sting of this disadvantage. Some have chafed under it. And now, finally, thanks to abortion, we have about as close to an equality as we're going to get. Now, women can sow their wild oats, so to speak, can enjoy the benefits of sexual liberty. And if there should be a complication like a pregnancy, well, abortion is the great equalizer. And in the end, Dr. Lamb, what we must have, whatever the consequences, is equality between the sexes. How do you respond?
Certainly. Yeah, well, that's the other side of that argument from the woman's perspective, is that it does, in their minds, lead towards equality of the sexes. Of course, we know that God gives equality to the sexes, but he also assigns responsibility, and that in a relationship, a man has that responsibility. But you're right. This abortion has become this great safety valve and the way out, and easy way out. Problem is that, and we're discovering this more and more, is that it has not become a means of freeing women because of the damage it does to them after an abortion and after they realize what they have done. It's such an unnatural act that, I think I've quoted this bumper sticker before on the air, that says, you know in your heart it's wrong. And we do know in our hearts it's wrong. And abortion has really not freed women. It has imprisoned them in this darkness of guilt and despair, so many of them. I see that I believe in Missouri, there's a task force has been appointed to study the effects of abortion and the harm that it does to women. And I see that as a very good thing. We need to raise that up and help all of us and help women see the tremendous hurt and pain that this is causing in so many women, relationships, the pain it brings to the men who are involved, grandparents, siblings. We just continue to learn more and more about the devastating effects upon our society of abortion. So I think we need to raise that side of the equation up, the great harm that abortion is doing to women.
We had a caller who did not want to go on the air, who wants to know, has a couple of questions. First of all, wants to know if a woman engages in sexual activity and then takes the morning after pill, and the morning after pill does its job, is that an abortion?
It depends on how the morning after pill does its job, because there are a couple of ways that it works. One is if depending on the timing of the woman's cycle, it will can prevent ovulation. So there's sperm present but no eggs, so there's not going to be a conception. However, the morning after pill, this very high dose of birth control pills, also thins the lining of the uterus, of the womb. And so that if there is a conception that takes place in the fallopian tube, and that embryo gets down to the uterus, that embryo would not be able to implant, and that would be an abortion. And so it's this other mechanism of the morning after pill, the reason we oppose the use of that. So that's the answer to the first question.
Second question is, and since our caller didn't stay on the line, all I can do is read what is written for me here. But the question is, if so, if it is an abortion, does God forgive all sin? Which I guess includes taking the morning after pill.
Well, the answer to that one is easy. It's yes. God does forgive all sin.
It may be easier for Dr. Lamb to proclaim than it is for the person who has used the morning after pill to receive or to hear.
Oh, I understand that completely. It's certainly easier for me to say. Nevertheless, that is the objective truth of what God tells us. And that is the great message that we need to be sharing to those who are hurting and who are feeling guilt because they've done something and maybe even at the time didn't realize that it was wrong, that the morning after pill can work as an abortifacient. And so we need to hold out the wonderful news of the gospel to these folks and to help them understand the objective nature of it, that this forgiveness depends upon what God has done in Christ on the cross and does not depend upon whether we feel that or not. I mean, there's no way you or I, Chuck, can ever put ourselves in a position of a woman who's made an abortion choice, destroyed the child within her, and then realizes what had taken place and the tremendous burden and guilt that they feel. And I've talked to many women who've had abortions, and that is a common thread, that this sin just seems too big to be forgiven. And that's why when I talk to pastors, I tell them if there's a single reason to talk about these issues and to do it from the pulpit, it's so that those who have made mistakes can hear the gospel, not just proclaimed, not just nice-sounding words, but to hear proclaimed and spoken and preached into their lives and applied to their sin, the specific sin of abortion. So, yeah, it's easy to say, but it's also the truth that needs to be said and over and over and over again.
So you said the morning after pill, if I heard you correctly, might function as a contraceptive in one case and an abortifacient in another case. Is that?
Yes. Yes.
Is there any way to know?
No.
No way to know.
Way to know. And so, as I said, that's why we oppose that. And you know, it's interesting here in Iowa, and this is true, I think, across the nation, Planned Parenthood is running an interesting campaign. The director, PR director here in Iowa, said this in a newspaper article, that Planned Parenthood is getting into the holiday spirit, and that's a quote, by offering free, and they're offering free morning after pill packets here in Iowa if you come to their facility on a certain date. You can also sign up for free IUDs and sign up for free vasectomies. So they're really promoting, as we talked about earlier, sexual promiscuity, because they know that'll lead to pregnancies and that'll lead to abortions, and that's what they're selling. So it's just amazing that Planned Parenthood uses the language of this holy time for their own evil ends. The gal also referred to it as she's delighted to be part of this mission to bring these free things to women and men.
In January, many churches will be doing Life Sundays. If I'm a pastor and I have 200 people in worship, 100 women sitting in front of me, is there a statistic, is there a probability as to how many of those 100 women who are sitting in front of me in my average typical church have had an abortion?
Well, you know that there are some statistics out there that would say between 30-40% of women by the age, can't remember the age right now off the top of my head, 28, will have had at least one abortion.
All right, let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
What would you say to me if I'm a pastor? And I am very pro-life. I mean, I feel the purpose of this cause deep within my spirit, and I want to help Dr. Lamb in any way I can, and I want to advance the pro-life cause within my own congregation, and I'm willing to preach about it from the pulpit, particularly on Life Sunday. But since I've got 100 women sitting in front of me, based on your statistic, I may have 30 to 35 to 40 women sitting in front of me who have had abortions, and I'm just reluctant to preach with the passion and the biblical integrity that I have on the issue, because I don't know what kind of devastation I might be doing to people who may have the deepest sense of guilt, and for that reason, I'm just not willing to risk it. So I'm gonna kind of mention it. We're gonna have a Life Sunday, and we're gonna try to be as positive and upbeat as possible, but that's all. What would you say to me?
Well, yeah, first of all, my quoting of statistics, I'm not sure of those, so let's not be passing those around. But we can say this, almost guaranteed, that if there's 100 women in front of the pastor, yes, there's going to be women there who've been involved in an abortion decision. There's going to be men out there who've been involved in that. And my advice to the pastor would be to... Certainly, it's a difficult issue, but Lutheran pastors, more than anybody else, I believe, can articulate law and gospel. And this calls for that kind of study and articulation. And that's why Lutherans for Life produces some sample sermons that pastors can look at, not necessarily read from the pulpit, but use parts of and so forth. But the main reason for dealing with these issues head-on is to, and the main reason for pointing to any sin is so that we can then proclaim the gospel and apply it to that sin. I have, as I said earlier, I met many women who felt as if abortion was just too big a sin to be forgiven. I've never met one yet, they're probably out there, certainly, who were offended because the issue was dealt with from the pulpit by a pastor. But I've met many who've been offended because it wasn't. And our silence...
Interesting.
Yeah, our silence on these issues, you see, proclaims Satan's favorite line. You know, did God really say? See, if we're not talking about the sin of abortion, then we are saying, did God really say abortion was wrong to a great percentage of our membership? If we never talk about it, our silence sends that message. To the post-abortive women and men in the congregation, our silence sends the message, did God really say this sin can be forgiven? You know, you don't hear about that in church, do you? And so, to me, is there a risk of offending? Yes.
Both ways.
But the greater offense is to have this message, the only message that can really make a difference with someone burdened with that kind of guilt, the only message that can offer free and complete forgiveness, to have that message and then draw it back and not proclaim it into that woman's life. That's a greater offense.
Let's take a telephone call here, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Eleanor. You're on the Bible study.
I feel perhaps that I shouldn't say anything, but I have lived through these experiences, and I carry around a lot of doubt about declaring that every pregnancy should be carried to term. I took care of a woman in the hospital who was 9 months pregnant, and the fetus was dead. I mean, there were no signs of life. This was 55, 60 years ago. But she did carry it to term. She was having contractions. So we were told to, you know, check the urine very carefully, sieve it, like you would for tea leaves or something. But anyway, fortunately or unfortunately, I saw the little black speck. It was curved, just a tiny black curve. It didn't have feet, hands, or anything like that. It must have died shortly after conception. But the woman carried it full term because the test that she had at that time said that she was pregnant. Okay. After she passed this, I don't know what was done, but she went the whole time. Now we have machines that would tell the baby was, if she, you know, carried pregnancy for 3 months, and the uterus was viewed on a screen, they could see that she was carrying a dead fetus because it wasn't growing. Now, there are other instances. Another instance that really bothered me, did I do the right thing or did I do the wrong thing? The woman had 8 children. A number of the last pregnancies were cesarean section. She was a former polio patient. The priest who she discussed that with told her that if she would have the tubes tied, as the doctor suggested, or really was determined that she should have, he said that if she carried another pregnancy, she would certainly die. That would leave 8 children without a mother. But anyway, if you were there and saw the turmoil in this mother's mind, a priest telling her that she was going to commit a mortal sin. I couldn't stand the tears or the agony, so I told her to see a younger priest whom I knew came into the hospital. And he told her, that is, she did see him, and he told her that it was a matter between her and God whether she had her tubes tied. Well, this relieved, the woman was still thinking about having her tubes tied and whether it was wrong or right, but she did go ahead and have her tubes tied. Now, I don't consider that a mortal sin.
All right, we've got about 4 minutes left here, Eleanor. Let's see what Dr. Lamb has to say.
There are other instances.
I'm sure you have many stories.
I do believe that there should be a medical reason to terminate a pregnancy.
Let's see what Dr. Lamb has to say. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Eleanor. I think you opened up a door here for struggles that many people have. In the first instance, you're talking about a very rare anomaly, and you're talking about a child who died already in the womb, and so you're really not talking there about an abortion when that child is either delivered as a stillborn child or removed from the womb prior to the time of birth, because the child has already died. So you're not doing anything surgically or physically to cause that child's death. So it's really not an abortion. In the second instance, you really weren't talking about abortion either. You're talking about preventing conception, in this case, tying the woman's tubes. And there's a variety of opinions, theologies out there about the rightness or wrongness of that. But, again, we're not talking about anything there that would take the life of a child that's already begun. So we can debate the whole issue of contraception, whether that's right or wrong. But here we're talking about the death of a child through abortion, and that is wrong. Even when there are severe abnormalities that, as she said, they can be tested for now, we're not the ones who make judgments on whether that life will have meaning or purpose or quality, as we say. And our call is to support and care for life, not to end life. So I think the examples that she gave, things that she has struggled with herself, really did not involve abortion in terms of the destruction of an innocent human life.
And I do so much appreciate Eleanor's sensitivity to the inevitable, very difficult judgment call that has to be made somewhere along the way, much more difficult to make 55 years ago than perhaps it is now, thanks to modern technology and modern medicine. However, let's not let that cloud the issue on the obvious. There are a good number of abortions that are being done for no good medical reason, for no good ethical reason. They're being done for convenience, and it may be that most of the abortions are done just for that reason. And that's an easy judgment call.
And that's the whole point, is that we don't want to make decisions or craft laws based on the rare case scenarios, that the vast majority of abortions today are, as you said, they're done for convenience. And either the child is perceived as being unwanted, can't afford a child, or I'm not getting along with my partner. Those are the three top reasons, at least according to Planned Parenthood's research arm, for getting an abortion today. And none of those involve fetal abnormalities, rape, incest, those kinds of things, but strictly a selfish kind of motivation for having an abortion. And that's what makes, again, that contributes then to the aftermath when that reality strikes, the selfishness. And that's why we just need to be so bold in speaking on these issues in our churches and applying the gospel to them.
Dr. Lamb, thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're very welcome.
Stay safe up there in your ice storm, and praise God your cell phone has hung on for this.
going well, yeah. I'm just going to stay in my house today and work from home.
Thank you, Dr. Lamb.
You're welcome.
Dr. James Lamb, Executive Director of Lutherans for Life in Nevada, Iowa. This hour tomorrow will feature an Advent Worship live broadcast from Ascension in St. Louis. The 10:05 hour, Professor Reed Lessing of Concordia Seminary, Genesis 32.
KFUO.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.